Coach Kyle, could you talk about your connection with Coach Quinn and the process you all went through last year and how it came to fruition this time around?
Yeah, we really got to know each other last year throughout the same process. You know, when I got let go from Washington, we started communicating a lot. Thought he'd have a chance to be up for some jobs, which he was. He got in contact with me. We had a lot of mutual friends. We coached against each other a bunch. So we knew of each other pretty well, but we had never met in person. So we developed a relationship over the phone. He asked me if I was interested in going with him if he ended up somewhere last year. It didn't work out for him. You know, they ended up going to the Super Bowl, and it didn't happen. But since last January, we've kept in touch all year, and we picked it up again this year.
Could you talk about leaving Cleveland with a couple years left on the contract, I guess, and then your what kind of happened in Washington there at the end?
Well, first of all, in Washington, nothing really happened at the end. We didn't win enough games. Well, you go 3-13, and I think that says it all. You go 3-13, and that's a tough year for everybody. So we did some good things the year before that, going to the playoffs, but we didn't get it done our second year. And when that happens, people change jobs, and I think that explains itself. But Cleveland was a tough decision for me. One of the hard ones I've had to make. There's a lot of things I enjoyed about Cleveland, but anytime you got a huge decision like I had and a tough one, you know, a lot of things go into it. And once the season ended, my wife and I, we talked about it a lot. And, you know, I'm not going to get into any specifics exactly what those details were, but there was a number of them. And, you know, the more we thought about it, we truly felt that it was the best thing for our family to move on. And
Matt Ryan fit in your offense. Sorry for cutting you off at the end.
That's good.
Yeah, how does Matt Ryan fit into your offense?
I think Matt Ryan fits in everybody's offense. You got a good quarterback like Matt. He's done a little bit of everything, whether it's on drop back, whether it's play action. He hasn't done a lot of movement stuff, but he has athletic ability to do it. So I'm really excited to get with Matt. I'd like to know what he's done here in the past, what we think we can help him with in the future, and I'm really looking forward to working with him.
Can you talk about the kind of running back that you like in your system?
Yeah, people ask me that all the time, and it's, you know, I like a good running back. So it's kind of, there's no absolute. You know, I've had big guys and I've had smaller guys, and I'll take any type of guy. I think, you know, Adrian Peterson, Marshawn Lynch are pretty good backs that are pretty big. That doesn't mean I don't want LeSean McCoy. So I think there's any type of back can succeed in this system. But the type of guys you want are guys who can put their foot in the ground, get downhill. You do want guys who can run, create arm tackles, and then run through them. I'm not looking for a guy who's got that you have to give 30 carries to get 100 yards. You know, you want guys who get downhill, who get over 4 yards a carry, and they move the chains for you.
Your initial thoughts on the group that you have here right now, including maybe a Steven Jackson who's getting up there in age?
Yeah, and that's something, you know, I've been here a week, and I've been doing a lot in this week, but the main thing we're doing right now is look at our own personnel. And, you know, I don't have a set opinion right now because I haven't watched enough tape, but Steven's a guy I've been a huge fan of over his whole career. Devontae was someone I loved coming out of college last year. And then the guy from Morgan State, I loved him coming out of college. So they're guys I remember from their college days hard. I know Steven because he's played for a long time, but I haven't evaluated any of those backs since college or just Steven over the year. So they're guys I'm really excited, looking forward to seeing them and then get them here in OTAs and see what we can do.
Worked with a number of quarterbacks. What does the relationship that you need to have with your quarterback need to be, and what do you want it to be with Matt Ryan?
Basically, if players want to be coached, you know, players, it's important to them as it is to you. They want to do as good as they can, and you want a quarterback to believe that you can help them. So you work as hard as you can to put guys in a situation to be successful. You want to know what makes them comfortable. You want them to communicate with you that, hey, I know this might work, but I'm not comfortable with it. You need that dialogue throughout the week, and you try plays throughout the week. That's what we practice for. But going into that game on Sunday, you got to have a very good idea of what he likes, what I like. And it's just a process of being able to communicate with each other. There's lots of ways to win. There's lots of ways to move the ball. You know, I've been fortunate enough being a coordinator the last 7 years. I've had to do a lot of different things, and I've had to adjust to different styles of play. But everybody's one doing different type things. And the main thing is having a good one. And like I said, with the running backs, and I definitely know we have a good one at quarterback. So I'm looking forward to working with them.
What are some main coaching points that you learned from working with Coach Kubiak in Houston and your dad that you employed when you were in Cleveland, but maybe even change a little bit more to your own style?
I think know, wherever you start up coaching, you know, you're always a little bit of a product of your environment. So you learn that style of football and how they see it. As you start to learn more and you watch other people, you start to develop your own style through experience and everything like that. But, you know, Coach Kubiak and then working with my dad in Denver, they were similar but different. And, you know, I'm similar to them also, but also they'll tell you very different too. But just in terms of finding ways to make the quarterback successful, there's ways, you know, when I first started as a coordinator in Houston, and we dropped back all the time. You know, we had a good quarterback who could do that in Matt Schaub. He was there in his prime. We had Andre in his prime, Owen Daniels. We had a bunch of good players, and we led the league in passing, and we weren't very good at running the ball. And then I had to adjust a little bit in Washington. We had some different situations, and learning how to run the ball better and be able to set up the pass game through play action and keepers and things like that. And then in Cleveland, I had a little bit of both. So, you know, my first year as a coordinator, I only wanted one way to do it, and that was the way I had done it. But after having some experience, I've had to do it other ways, and I've seen there's other ways you can be successful. And I think that's something that both of them had always preached to me, that it's good coaches are about putting their players in good situations, and it's all about the player, and you got to find what they do. Most of them are good. That's why they're at this level, and there's lots of ways to do it, and you got to find out which way they do it the best.
You're walking into a situation that a lot of new coaches haven't, where you have an established quarterback. You have a Julio Jones. How much more comfortable does that make you with making this transition?
You know, I'd be lying if I said it didn't. You know, that's something everybody works for in this business, you know, starting with the quarterback position. And there's a lot of good quarterbacks in this on this planet, but there's probably only about five, you know, maybe eight on a given year that people aren't trying to replace. So it's an extremely tough position that everybody wants that franchise guy. And to have a guy to already be in a situation where they have that, it is very enjoyable because you can focus on other things, focus on other positions. It makes things easier. It makes things easier for the other positions. And it always makes it a little bit easier to coach, too.
You said the success you had with Andre Johnson. Talk about Julio Jones, what you know about him, how you said you're going to work with the guy with his caliber.
Yeah, I mean, Julio's like you draw it up. I mean, and you speak of Andre, and I that's probably the guy to compare him to the most. You know, there's lots of different ways to be good at receiver, but Andre and Julio are two guys who are explosive as anybody. The way they come off the ball and the way they can eat up a cushion and scare a DB every single play by just the power and stuff they can come off the ball, the physicalness they play with running through the ball, it's very exciting. And it's good in just routes and dropbacks and screens, but in the play action game too, especially. I mean, they can blow the top off and scare people deep, and when people are deep, they can do the intermediate stuff too. So he's definitely a special one to have.
Coach, can you talk about how you personally assess an offensive line and what you'll tell an offensive line coach sort of in the introductions as to what it is you're going to want and need, what it is you want to do?
We believe in the outside zone scheme. You know, we're going to do a lot of things, but we're going to major in running the outside zone, which is what I did in Houston. It's what I did in Washington. It's what I did in Cleveland. Something I do believe in very strongly. And the main thing we're going to get these alignment when they get in here is we just want to get them to run. And they're going to run a lot more than they ever have before. We're going to try to challenge the defense sideline to sideline, not just between the tackles. And it's a challenge to get guys to run, but yet still be as physical as anybody. So there's an element there that it's not just lateral, but it's getting downhill too. It takes time to develop. There's nowhere I've been where you just get in right away and guys just get it. You usually ask them to do stuff that they haven't done consistently throughout their career. But when you get the commitment from guys to do it, you rep it all the time, and guys usually come around.
What is the most intense part of camp, do you believe, maybe watching those guys work for that month?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, if I had to put one thing into it, I think everything in camp will be intense. But, you know, receivers run routes all their whole career. You know, there's certain things we'll ask them to do differently. Quarterbacks throw the ball their whole career. But O-linemen, it's a little bit different what we'll ask them to do. So some things will be new to them, but I think they'll enjoy it. And, you know, I think we'll have the tape to show them so they believe in it. And then we will give them plenty of reps of it because it's not something we're just going to get rid of after a day. So it'll be fun to get started.
What is the philosophy behind it?
You talked about blowing the top off the defense. And despite the ups and downs in Cleveland last year, you guys had a lot of big plays. Is that sort of a point of emphasis for you when you devise game plans?
And yeah, it's always, you know, it's something I've been fortunate I feel to have throughout my career. But it's also dictated what the defense gives you. We're never going to say, hey, we're just going to do this no matter what they play. I think it's very hard life when you live that way, especially in the NFL. But we're going to make them defend the deep ball, and you got to do that. And when they do defend the deep ball, it makes the intermediate passes a lot easier. And if they're going to, if they know you aren't going to throw that deep ball, then life is extremely tough. So you got to take it into each game, what your game plan is going in, what they put on tape, and you got to be ready to change that in the first quarter, second quarter, and series to series. So anything we do from a schematic standpoint is we're going to try to give our guys advantage.
You obviously need a running game to set that up.
Though, right? It makes it much, much easier. Yes.
Could you talk about, you know, Matt Ryan's already got the playbook. His wife's tweeted out that he's already studying.
He must have stole it. I didn't get it.
Or he's got a playbook from somewhere. Could you talk about working with him, your conversations with him, and how you all are, you know, going to try to get on the same page here before, you know, the off-season program starts in April?
Yeah, I just met Matt for the first time last week, and, you know, he came in and just introduced himself. And, you know, I've obviously, everyone knows how good of a player he was, but that was my first time being around him as a person. And I'm sure all you guys have been here. You guys know how great of a guy he is and as impressive off the field as he is on the field. And he's eager to get started. So I told him I need some time. We're looking at a lot of other stuff right now, and he needs to get away. But we're going to study this roster, try to put a playbook together. So when they come in here in 2 months or whatever it is, we're ready to go. We're going to have plenty of time to work on it. But I want to make sure when he comes, I know I don't have to make sure he'll be ready to go, and we'll hit it very hard.
Coach, can you talk about the importance of a tight end in your offense?
Yeah, I think tight end's always important just because it's hard to have a threat of many runs if a tight end's not out there. You know, you'd love to go four receivers every single play or even five receivers, but it makes it a lot easier for the defense when they know you have to throw it. The more times fullbacks go off the field or tight ends go off the field, it limits your run options, which makes you not as balanced. So the threat of a tight end who can be out there, which opens up your run game, but also is a threat in a matchup in the pass game, it makes it a lot easier for a play caller, makes it easier for the O-lineman, for everybody, because it's hard in this league when you become one-dimensional. I mean, the defenses are too good, coaches are good, too good, defensive lines are too good, and if anybody tease off on something, they're going to stop you. So I think it's very important to have a tight end out there so you can always have a threat of a different number of runs.
Going back to that zone scheme, what's the philosophy behind it? Why do you believe in it?
Well, it's, you know, first of all, it's worked for a long time. So it's, you know, I think it makes sense to me just thinking about it and watching it. But when you have years and years of tape to watch it, it confirms it. And also I believe that, you know, I think it's similar to what Dan Quinn's preached on defense that, you know, we're not trying to make ourselves smarter than we really are. This is just football. We need something sound that we believe in that puts the defense in a bind, and we need to be very good at it. And whenever you have something you believe in that's schematically sound, you drill that over and over and over and over again until you get very good at it. If zone happens to be what I believe in. If I believed in a gap scheme and running power and all that stuff, which I think is very good, but you'd have to commit to it to be good at it. And that's really my philosophy in everything, that you don't want to just dabble in a bunch of stuff. We want to be very good at something. And if you're very good in something, then you have a chance to do it week in and week out throughout 16 games. And that's kind of my philosophy in starting with the zone. And it's committing to something. It's being better at it than anyone they go against.
What you said earlier, it sounds as if the type of linemen that fit best are athletic guys, fast guys.
Yeah, you need to be able to run. And it's not always necessarily the 40. It's quickness. I had some bigger guys in Cleveland than I did in Washington, and there were some pluses to that. There were some minuses to it. You know, it's everybody wants a huge player who can run faster than everyone else. And until they allow me to spend the top pick in the draft on 5-0 linemen 5 years in a row, that's not going to happen. So you got to find other ways to get by. You know, and sometimes you can get a smaller guy who can run, but that's going to have its limitations either. But you're trying to find the best players possible. But if you can't, if you don't have the effort to run and you're not in shape to run from numbers to numbers, it's going to be tough to do what we're asking you to do.
With the limited number of padded practices, sure, the conversation with Coach Quinn and Coach Smith about how practice has to be, and the message is going to be: you want a job, earn your job. You want minutes, earn your minutes. Is there sort of an intensity level that we might be palpable with this many new guys looking to find out who can play?
It's always a challenge, and, you know, and it's a good problem to have as a coach when you got to pull them back a little bit and tell them to chill out some. But it is always a challenge. I do think the zone scheme helps that a little bit more. because you're not pulling people and kicking people out as much. And when you do that stuff without pads on, you have to stop. And when you're running on somewhat angles, it's not as good as having pads on, but you can still get some work done without pads. You can have the guys who physically and athletically, you can see who can do it. And you never know about someone until all the pads are on and you can bring in cuts and do everything else. But I do feel a commitment to zone allows you to get a little bit more out of unpadded practices than doing some other stuff.
I mean, a little more time for guys during preseason games. Is there a chance we see guys sort of extended work to make sure that they're ready for game one?
Yes. I mean, you have a good idea about who you have and who are the guys who are more talented, who should be the starters, who this guy should be a backup, but you don't know until those games. I mean, those games come and a guy who looks better than everyone else in practice and you realize it's a little bit too big for him. The backup who's not as talented is a lot better. And those are the things that I've always felt that you find out in games. Who doesn't tense up when the lights come on? Who is it not too big for? They practice the same as they play.
Can you talk a little bit more just about Dan Quinn, the man, what attracted you to this position with him, knowing that you had to wait for the period before he was officially hired and then for you to come on board?
Dan was, one of the main reasons I wanted to come here. It's, I was very impressed with Dan and just really how loyal he was to me. He told me a long time ago that he wanted me as a coordinator. And for a guy to do that who, I had never met in person before, who I hadn't spent a lot of time with, it made me feel extremely loyal to him. I could tell he believed in me from a football standpoint, from watching on tape and going against me and stuff. And when you have a guy who believes in you, it gives you a lot more confidence to believe in yourself and to do what you ever got to do to make that guy successful. And I think he's a very honest person, and he was straightforward with me and everything, never oversold me, just always told me the truth. And that's really all you can ask for a person. And I think you got a special guy in that aspect.
Were there particular games that you two had gone against each other that he said, wow, you really impressed me, that one that stood out? I mean, did he say
that? No, because a lot of it was just going against Seattle and a couple, our playoff area, that was when he was in Florida. But then he comes back and we have the tape and stuff to go against each other, and it's going against that scheme over the years. And I think it's the type of philosophy that he wanted. And I think our philosophy on offense is extremely similar to their philosophy on defense. You play Seattle and you don't see a ton of fronts and a ton of coverages. You see coverages and fronts that you see a lot, but for some reason they do it better than everyone else. And it's because they're committed to it. They've been committed to it for whatever it is, 4 or 5 years. And it takes time, but they believe in it. And it's a sound system. And they drill the heck out of it. And they do it and play faster than everyone. And that's exactly really how we see offensive football, too.
How much up-tempo, no huddle with a veteran quarterback? I'm assuming it's a little bit easier to envision that. But you personally, how much do you think that's the weapon it can be in the league?
I think there's pluses and minuses to it, just like everything. It's great if you're scoring. It's a nightmare when you go 3 and out in 5 seconds and the defense is right back up to on the field. So it's something I've done a little bit of these last 2 years. I did a lot more of it in Cleveland last year. I want to say going into week 12, we were the second team behind Philly and the fastest in between plays. I don't know if we finished that way. That was just a stat I saw towards the end of the year. So that was something I did a lot of. Even we don't do no huddle, our tempo is pretty fast. And we get in and out of the huddle extremely fast. There are some advantages to no huddle, but anything you do a lot of, the defense is going to figure out how to stop it. So there's nothing that you just say, hey, we're going no huddle all year. And it's going to make sense to sometimes. It's going to make sense to some quarters based off of. And when you do go no huddle, you got to take the whole team into account. It also has to do with your defensive matchup on the offense and things like that. So it's something that we want to have the ability to do, but I can't tell you when or why it'll come.
Coach, how do you value your running backs in the pass game?
I value them a lot. The main thing is I want a running back, first of all. I don't want to draft a guy who's just good in the pass game. I mean, the first and foremost thing is I want a guy who we can give the rock to and he can carry us. And the pass game is a bonus. And if we do have a guy who's special in the pass game, we'll use him. And I haven't had too many elite guys in that category. I'm always looking for one, and I hope to have one because it does make third downs a lot easier. It makes red zone a lot easier. You got some serious matchup issues with some linebackers and stuff. But it's first and foremost, I want a guy to run the ball.
With free agency coming, a lot of times people will ask you what offensive pieces might you want, but isn't it almost important to come to ask you about defensive guys that you've gone against when they start to sort of consider those types of things?
I think it can be. I mean, that's something that when we look at free agents, I always ask our defensive coaches what they thought of them playing against them. Sometimes it's different for offensive and defensive guys. A guy who scared me because he just jumped off the screen because he was so talented and he sacked a quarterback a couple times. He might bother a defensive coach because over 16 games he had a lot more misses than he did those highlight reels. So it can be totally different, but we're in here all day. We're in here all year, so we definitely have those conversations with each other, and you take everything with a grain of salt, though.
Coach, I know you said you don't want to talk about it in detail, but is it hard not to ignore the fallout there in Cleveland, what's happened with Johnny Manziel?
Johnny's a great guy, and I think Johnny does get a little bit of bad rep with that because Johnny worked very hard for me. I really enjoyed coaching him, and I don't know what he's going through right now, but I think I'm confident Johnny will work it all out, and I think he's got a chance to have a good future. But, you know, you make some tough decisions, and Cleveland was obviously a very tough decision for me, and nobody likes to be in the media. I'd rather just hide in a hole and never have to do this ever, but it's part of the business, and I understand that. But you can't make decisions just based off of that. You got to make decisions what you think's best for you, what's best for your family, and if you believe it's right, then you live with it, and you live with the consequences, and you hope tough decisions end up working out. And the fact that it's led me to Atlanta, and I'm in this situation right now, I couldn't be any happier.
Just quickly, Coach Thub, just to clarify, the outside zone scheme is the direct descendant of the Alex Gibb system?
I know Alex would tell you that. No, yeah, I think it's something that started a long time in Denver. Everyone was running outside zone. I think Denver during those Super Bowl years with Alex and stuff with Terrell Davis, they were the first team to commit to it and say, this is what we're going to do. And it's more that philosophy, which, I obviously grew up watching. You know, I never coached with my dad until I went to Washington. That was my first time, and learned a lot doing that. But it's something I've grown up watching. And since I got in the NFL, you know, I started in Tampa Bay, and that was mainly gap schemes and counters and powers. But I had to watch a lot of football, and it's something I grew up around, so I was probably a little bit biased to it, but it's something I truly can say I've always believed in, watching it, not even being a part of it also.
And then just reviewing your numbers over the years, you all have been high in yardage but not so high in the red zone area. Has there been a problem there, or is that something that is that analysis fair, or how do you all plan to attack the red zone here?
You want to get your best players the ball down there, and it's changed with every team. You know, I don't know all my numbers, what they've been in the red zone over the years. I'm sure that we've had good ones in the year before, but it depends on your team. You'd always like to run the ball. That makes it a lot easier down there, but it also gets harder to run the ball. It gets tight, and when that happens, you need good quarterback play. You need big targets, but there's lots of different ways to be good in the red zone, and, you know, being a coordinator for 7 years, I feel I've been good in every aspect, but I've also had years where I've been bad in it too. So those bad years, you learn why. That's what we do now. You study it, and you got to find with the players you have. You got to find ways to make them successful, and if you don't, you usually don't last there too long.